Következő előadónk László Virgil, az Evangélikus Hittudományi Egyetem a Mára Budapestről, a újszövetségi kutatója, előadásának címe, a Krisztusban való részesedése Galata levélben. Our next lecturer, Virgil László, Lutheran Theological University Budapest, researcher of the theology of the New Testament. His title, Participation in Christ in the Epistle to the Galatians. Please give me.
Thank you very much, highly esteemed professors, ladies and gentlemen, dear audience. When we come to think about Pauline soteriology, the first thing that most probably pops up in our mind is the doctrine of justification by faith. This doctrine was emphasized especially and so emphatically by Martin Luther that he titled it as the Articulus Stantis et Cadentis Ecclesiae, that is the article of the standing and falling of the Church. It is also for sure that from the first generation after Luther, his followers understood this doctrine as a forensic metaphor, that is, Christ declares us right rather than makes us right before God. An exception was Andreas Osiander, the reformator of Nuremberg, whose soteriology was focused around the idea of the indwelling of Christ in the believer. Anyhow, since Osiander's Christology received serious critics from Orthodox Lutheranism as a false teaching, his soteriological insights were also put aside or even confronted. Thus, a basically only and solely forensic understanding was prevailing for more than four centuries as a normative view in Protestant theological thinking and scholarship, with its origin attributed to Luther. Anyhow, changes and vivid scholarly debate burgeoned from the end of the 1970s, when the so-called Finnish school, or the new Finnish interpretation of Luther, initiated and led by Professor Tuomo Mannerma, brought new arguments to the fore, claiming that for Luther himself, justification by faith was not simply a forensic, but also an existential metaphor. This statement can be established especially based on Luther's lectures on Galatians, which he delivered in 1531 and 1535. In his work, Luther combines the dimension of the believer's participation in Christ with the cross and resurrection of him. For instance, Luther exegetes Galatians 2:20 with the following words. Here Paul clearly shows how he is alive, and he states what Christian righteousness is. Quaesit justitia Christiana, namely, that righteousness by which Christ lives in us, not the righteousness that is in our own person. But here Christ and my conscience must become one body. Oport et Christum et conscientia meam fieri unum corpus. So that nothing remains in my sight but Christ crucified and risen. As Mika Ruokanen puts it, it is obvious that Luther understands justification in terms of the forgiveness of sins and of the imputation of the gift righteousness of Christ, which is the juridical or forensic justification. For Latin, this is favor, based on the atonement and the penal substitution of the cross. But simultaneously, he also sees justification as participation in the fruits of the cross and the resurrection of Jesus, as well as in the personal righteousness and the divine person of Christ. And this is Mannerma's real ontic union with Christ, which is Domum. Or to quote an even more up-to-the-point passage of Luther's lectures on Galatians, I quote him, therefore, Christian faith is not an idle quality or an empty husk in the heart. It takes hold of Christ in such a way that Christ is the object of faith, or rather, not the object, but the one who is present in faith itself, in ipsa fide Christus adest. Therefore, faith justifies because it takes hold of and possesses this treasure, the present Christ. But how he is present, this is beyond our thought, says Luther. So Mannerma concludes that justification does not only mean a forensic juridical declaration of the guilty, non-guilty, but it also is an intimate union of the sinner with Christ, unio cum Christo. In this union, the believer participates in the divine person and in the divinity of Christ. Just a side remark that regarding this real ontic union aspect of Luther, it is hard to leave unnoticed the similarities with the patristic and the Eastern Orthodox notion of theosis or deification, even if they certainly cannot be exactly equated. Now, in New Testament research, it was Adolf Deismann in his dissertation in 1892, titled Die Neutestamentliche Formel in Christo Jesu, who brought the question of the widely used Pauline en Christo formula to the fore. After counting 164 occurrences of the term and its equivalents in the Pauline corpus, not including Colossians, Ephesians and the Pastorals, he determined it as a definitely characteristic expression of Pauline Christianity. He also opined that all these cases ought to be understood in a locative sense, which was criticized later by many other scholars. According to Deismann, the in Christ formula, together with the Christ in me, Christ in you, refer to the most intimate possible fellowship of the Christian with the living spiritual Christ, which could be also characterized as mystical. These two aspects of the communion with Christ, that is, en Christo in Christ and Christ in me or you, is similar to the air, which by breathing is in us and fills us, while also surrounds us. A few decades later, Albert Schweitzer, in 1930, in his famous De Mystic des Apostels Paulus, argued that the believers share the dying and rising again of Christ in mysterious fashion. Thus the elect share a corporeity with Christ, and through the union they become a manifestation of Jesus Christ's personality. In Paul's argumentation, the being in Christ corresponds to, and as a state of existence, takes the place of the physical being in the flesh. Schweitzer also expressed his bold and often cited opinion that the doctrine of righteousness by faith is therefore a subsidiary crater which has formed within the rim of the main crater, the mystical doctrine of redemption through being in Christ. Jumping a little bit ahead, it was Ed Perry Sanders, E.P. Sanders, in 1977, in his groundbreaking work titled Paul and Palestinian Judaism, who compared contemporary Judaism with Pauline Christianity, defining them as two different patterns of religion. While he identified the former one as covenantal gnomism, he labeled Paul's theological thinking in terms of being a participationist eschatology. But contrary to Schweitzer, Sanders denies the reality of this participation. New Testament scholars are not on the same page about how to define the Pauline meaning of en Christo. A bunch of them, like Bultmann, Davies, N.T. Wright, Robert Tannehill, Michael Gorman, Richard Hayes, Michael Walter, and many others, think that it carries only one, or basically one dominant meaning. Although these authors differ in their exact suggestions regarding its content of this meaning. This fact led another significant group of scholars like Albrecht Höcke, Günther Hornkamp, Charles Moore, William Berkeley and James Dunn to the conclusion that any single interpretation of the faith that has enough specific content to be interesting fits some passages much better than others. It is therefore unsurprising that an increasing number of studies sees en Christo as bearing a cluster of loosely related meanings, as Teresa Morgan puts it. Or as Blass and De Bruyne's Greek grammar of the New Testament and other early Christian literature remarks after listing several uses of an with the dative, I quote, the phrase an Christo or an Kyrio, which is copiously appended by Paul to the most varied concepts, utterly defies definite interpretation. For instance, James Dunn enumerates three categories of meaning, like objective, subjective, and ethical, while William Barclay four categories, like redemptive, parallel to Dunn's objective, locative, parallel to Dunn's subjective, beneficial, this doesn't have a parallel, and modal, parallel to Dunn's ethical. Okay, I thought that's not at the half of the lecture, sorry. In the recent few years, authors like Michael Gorman, Grant McCaskill, Teresa Morgan and others dedicated several thorough monographs and articles to the issue. I would like to highlight only one less known of these works because of its, I think, witty proposal of solution. While the already mentioned Finnish Luther researcher Tuomo Mannerma borrowed the dogmatic notion of communicatio idiomatum to characterize Luther's both forensic and real ontic understanding of the Fröhliche Wechsel, commercium mirabile, between Christ and the believer, James Gifford, in his book, talks about a perichoretic salvation, based on several Johannine texts related to the Menaine, to the Menaine verb, and based on texts carrying the Pauline in Christ, Christ in me motive. That is, he proposes that the believer's union with Christ is a third type of perichoresis. The Greek notion of perichoresis emerged originally in the 7th-8th century regarding the Holy Trinity. It describes how the three divine persons, although being different, are also one at the same time by mutual indwelling and containment in each other. That is, without losing their essential oneness or without being absorbed into each other. The second use of perichoresis may help us to grasp the hypostatic union of the divine and human in Christ. Gifford, very genuinely, in my opinion, proposes to understand the biblical teaching of the union of Christ and the believer as a third type of perichoresis. Now, participation in Christ in Galatians. The phrase en Christo occurs 83 times in the Pauline corpus, while the very similar, basically equal, en Kyrio in the Lord 47 times. In the epistle to the Galatians, these are seven instances of the en Christo and one of the en to Kyrio formula. In Galatians, we can definitely perceive the other side of the coin as well, namely, in the Christ in me, Christ in you passages. According to Louis Smith, the term Christ in you and me refers to a personal transformation to make believers resemble what they are in Christ, that is, in the new order of life that began at the death and resurrection of Christ. We can see this exactly in Galatians 2:20. I have been crucified with Christ. It is no longer I who live, but Christ lives in me. It is more than remarkable that this passage is right in the middle of a broader pericope dealing with the opposition of justification by works of the law and justification by faith. This pericope in Galatians 2 from verse 15 to 21 which according to Hans-Dieter Betz's rhetorical critical approach is the propositio, the thesis of the whole letter. This position may substantiate what I have said before regarding Luther's understanding, that is, the forensic and the existential aspects cannot be separated from each other. Entirely congruent with this is Kyle Snodgrass's remark in one of his articles. He says that in truth, the forensic categories only work within participationist one, once, for example, in Romans 3:24, 1 Corinthians 1:30, this Galatians passage, and Philippians 3:9. We can also perceive a peculiar usage in Galatians 4:19, where Paul titles the Galatians as my little children For whom I am again in the anguish of childbirth until Christ is formed in you. This is a weird image of Paul as a woman in the pains of labor and Christ as a fetus who needs more time to be fully formed. Beverly Roberts Caventa understands this latter thing not as a spiritual or moral development of the Galatians, rather the formation of Christ among the Galatians is simultaneously their crucifixion with Christ. And this might remind us to the former Galatians 2:19 that Eric also scrutinized, Christo synestaomai. Regarding these two aforementioned passages, just like many others by Paul, for James Dunn it is an obvious implication that in Christ denotes transfer of lordship and existential participation in the new reality brought about by Christ. At the heart of the motif is not merely a belief about Christ, but an experience understood as that of the risen and living Christ. We could scrutinize several other related Galatians passages. For example, in Galatians 3:25-28, there are several ones, I guess you know these. But now let us jump to the conclusion because of lack of time. Kai Snodgrass argues that the failure of people to deal with participationist language has caused numerous problems, including difficulty in explaining atonement ideas, suggestions of justification as legal fiction, sterile and abstract views of faith, and little basis for ethics, as often noted. How indeed does the effect of Christ's death on believers actually make sense? And if mental assent to facts wipes out sin and guilt, what impetus is there for strong ethical commitment? Typical understandings of faith will not solve the problems, but faith is not abstract and mental, and the New Testament faith at least cannot be understood apart from the ideas of union, attachment, and participation. Faith is a real participation with Christ. Snodgrass also admits that participation with Christ, the idea of being in Christ, is indeed a metaphor, but not a mere metaphor, as if metaphor meant less than real. Metaphor is often the most powerful way to express the reality, and the reality in this case is the identity is viewed as housed in Christ. Being in Christ means your identity is shaped by His, both in terms of His, I mean Christ's, both in terms of what happened to Him in a self-giving death and in resurrection to life. His narrative of life, death and resurrection and His character are the determiners of existence in the sense of being shaped by His past, by His ongoing life and by the conviction that what happened is in his resurrection will happen for His people in the future. We began our study with referring to Martin Luther's lectures on Galatians and the New Finnish Research. Tuomo Mannerma strongly argues that for Luther, Christ is really present in faith, in ipsa fide Christus adest. Also considering what we have said about contemporary New Testament research, my suggestion is that let us not rule out the possibility that Luther, whose name became a swear word, especially among New Perspective Pauline scholars, claiming that he terribly misunderstood Paul, still has the chance to shake hands with the apostle to the nations, as two friends standing on the same ground of both forensic and participationist understanding of soteriology. Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you for your presentation.